From inside the castle in Owings Mills, Maryland, it is the Banner Ravens podcast. Paul Mancano and Jonah Schaefer. We are going on hour 280 of being at the castle for day one of the NFL draft. We've had some good meals. We've had some pudding. We have had a selection.
There was pudding?
There was chocolate pudding, yeah, available for the media. I can't believe you didn't indulge. We have had the selection of Clemson cornerback Nate Wiggins with the 30th overall pick, and we are going to break down exactly what this pick means for the Ravens. But first, Jonas, you have a word of the day, or a phrase of the day, I should say.
God, I don't feel good about this.
Nor should you.
Not opportunistic. I don't want to say it, Paul. I'm realizing the folly of my ways. He's fast. All right, he's fast.
Is fast the word of the day? It's not very clever.
I know. And it took forever for them to actually do it. Let's just go with fast. It doesn't matter. I was going to say carpe DB because they seized the DB. But should I go with carpe CB? It doesn't really sound the same.
It doesn't sound good either way. I'm going to go ahead and say that. Neither of those sounds particularly good. Jonas, the we talked about before this draft, the Ravens have this knack for sticking in their original draft position and waiting for the talent to fall to them. And I was concerned when we were doing our mock drafts. We were looking at the amount of offensive tackles that would be off the board. We were looking at the cornerbacks that could be off the board. And I think the Ravens benefited from the fact that everybody in this draft got quarterback happy. And we still don't fully understand what the Atlanta Falcons are doing by taking Michael Penix, number 8 overall. I don't think in 20 years we'll have understood what they were doing. But the Ravens will say thank you very much, and thank you to the Broncos for taking Bo Nix, and thank you for allowing this defensive draft class to populate the later picks of the first round.
The Falcons really kind of threw off the grading curve for everyone else. Like, I think this is probably the Ravens taking Wiggins as an A, but just imagine it if it like happened one pick after the Falcons took Penix. Like A+, A++.
Yeah.
I think we talked about this in the podcast. Like, the draft board was probably going to fall their way because we thought that there would be some chaos in the top half of the draft. Didn't expect it to be Michael Penix and Bo Nix both going, but they did. And other stuff happened that was, you know, amenable to the Ravens' wishes. And now here we are. I mean, like, what's the lowest grade you'll expect to see in the roundup of grades tomorrow? Like, maybe a B+, and that might just be from someone who is anti, you know, skinny cornerback. I mean, and on that note, one of the questions that I had for Eric DaCosta was, you know, he has talked openly about how last year he was a big fan of Emmanuel Forbes, who was another skinny, speedy cornerback out of Mississippi State, who I think we've talked about on the podcast. Ravens liked him as a mid-round pick. He came off the board. They end up taking Zay Flowers. Forbes goes to Washington, has a terrible rookie year, just a flagrant disaster. And I wondered if that would be in the back of the Ravens' mind if someone like Wiggins were available for them. Obviously, it's a little bit different because Wiggins, even this spring, has shown that he can put on weight. Like, I think he went to the combine at 173, and he went to his pro day weighing in at 181, and I think was all good weight. So the Ravens said that they have a plan for him. They joked that, you know, you can't become a Raven and not put on some good weight, whether you're on the coaching staff or the front office or the player. So he's got a big frame. You know what I mean? Like, he's 6'1", 6'2". He's only 20. He was talking about how he's not fully stretched out yet. So I don't know. I don't have the diagnostics to imagine what his optimal playing weight would be. But if he can be Marcus Peters level run defender, which was not great, and still bring that pass coverage panache, then I think the Ravens got a great pick here.
Yeah, I mean, the Forbes pick last year, that the ball production was insane. And he had like an insane number of interceptions. I don't remember the final total. A bunch of those were run back for touchdowns. And I think Washington looked at that and said, we're willing to overlook this. I think it was slightly different because I think that Wiggins, the slightness of his frame is like the only big concern essentially right with him. Whereas I do think Emmanuel Forbes, there were some more concerns about him in coverage, and he made up for it with that insane ball skills. And also, Forbes wasn't really looked at as a first round pick a lot through that process. And it wasn't until the last couple of weeks that he got bumped up some draft boards. Nate Wiggins, pretty much from the start, has been looked at as a first round level cornerback. And, you know, every GM is going to say, we didn't think that the player that we got with our first round pick was going to be there. Aside from the Bears. And I don't know. Can the Falcons say that they didn't think Michael Penix was going to be there at number eight? I don't know. But essentially, that's what Eric DaCosta said. But you could say that there is some truth to that when it comes to Nate Wiggins, because he was being mocked a lot higher than 30th overall. What he brings to the table, obviously the weight is a concern right now. Hopefully they give him some of the chocolate puddings that we ate in the press room. The speed is off the charts. 4.28 40-yard dash at the combine, which was incredible from Nate Wiggins. He has great speed, great coverage ability, and outstanding. If you watch his highlight tape, it's terrific. He rarely got thrown at in the ACC. Apparently, according to Eric DaCosta, Dabo Swinney, the Clemson head coach, was texting him saying, please draft this guy. I think that he makes a lot of sense in this Ravens secondary, because Marlon Humphrey is a pretty physical cornerback. Brandon Stevens in that same kind of ilk. And now you have three guys in Wiggins, in Humphrey, and Stevens that all have great pedigree. Two of them have already shown that they can do it in the NFL. And this is for a defense that had a ton of attrition in terms of talent in free agency this offseason. They're trying to reload here, and they're trying to give Zach Orr some more pieces. And I think Nate Wiggins goes away in closer to accomplishing that.
Yeah. No one happier right now, probably, than Zach Orr. You know, we talked about
then Michael Penix
and Michael Penix's agent. 2 points regards to his frame and kind of how he holds up. We got the chance to talk to him tonight on a Zoom call, and I asked him, you know, if there were a game that you feel like exemplified your shutdown ability from last year, what would it be? And he rattled off a couple of games. And one of them, which I did expect him to name, and he did name, was his game against Florida State. And Florida State, you know, we talked about Keon Coleman,
yeah,
big boy, Johnny Wilson, even bigger boy, two guys who you would expect, even though they don't have that 4.4 speed, might be able to bully a guy.
Isn't Johnny Wilson the 6'7" guy?
Yeah. Yeah. But if you guys are sickos, and you know, if you're watching this, you're already a sicko. But if you want a second stream experience, just go to youtube.com. No free ads, but just Google search for Nate Wiggins, Florida State. You'll find 3 minutes and 17 seconds of film cutups, and that will show you Nate Wiggins going up against two bigger guys. And in that game, according to PFF, he was targeted, I believe, 4 times. And gave up exactly 0 catches. So again, there are going to be better guys that he faces in the NFL than Johnny Wilson and Keon Coleman, obviously. But we talked all offseason, even after the Ravens lost what they did in free agency, about this defense and how the spine of it was going to be the strength of it. Now you have a realistic world where Marlon Humphrey comes back full strength. Brandon Stevens builds on year 3. You throw Nate Wiggins there in the mix, and maybe he's, you know, a rookie sensation. How do you go about attacking this defense? You know, you have this foundational spine that is going to keep everything aligned. But if you're also locking stuff down on the outside with Wiggins, Marlon, you know, maybe Jalen Armour-Davis or Pepe Williams make the leap that, you know, Ravens coaches are hoping that they will. That's a very, very strong secondary. And that's not something that that's not a word that we were using to describe this Ravens secondary just a week ago.
Yeah. And in terms of what the Ravens could have done with that 30th overall pick, other than Nate Wiggins, you saw all those tackles go off the board pretty quickly. You saw Joe Alt, obviously, was a top 5 pick. CJ Latham, Alabama, he was gone at 7th. Olufoshanu, Tulisi Fuaga, and then Amarius Mims goes off the board 18th. To the Bengals. Jordan Morgan from Arizona goes off 25th. Tyler Guyton goes off the pick before the Ravens. So once you got to that point, I figured they weren't going to take an offensive tackle because I thought that kind of ended the bona fide first round talent offensive lineman. You know, I think you could talk about the next tier, maybe worth trading up for in day 2, or if they fall, would be heck of a pick at 62. Like Kingsley Suamataia would fit in that category, but I don't think that there was an offensive tackle that would have made sense. Once Guyton went off the board at 29, I don't think there was an offensive tackle that wouldn't have been a reach at 30th overall. At cornerback, though, there were a couple guys that I thought could have fit into this spot. It took a long time for the first cornerback to come off the board in this draft. The first cornerback, I believe, came off the board 22nd overall, and that was to the Eagles, Toledo cornerback Quinyon Mitchell. You saw Terrion Arnold go shortly after that. But there were two guys that I thought that we talked a lot about in the pre-draft process. We talked a lot about Kool-Aid McKinstry from Alabama. We talked a lot about Cooper DeJean, who we ended up taking in our mock draft. What do you think separated Nate Wiggins in Eric DaCosta and the Ravens' mind and put him ahead of Cooper DeJean and Kool-Aid McKinstry?
It might have just been as simple as the medicals. Kool-Aid is expected to be back for training camp as he comes back from that Jones fracture. And, you know, I guess the Jones fracture could be something that just becomes degenerative, or maybe you just lose a bit of your athleticism if it's not dealt with correctly, or maybe you deal with the risk of future re-injury. But he still ran a 4.47 40 on that Jones fracture on that right foot. I guess that's one reason. Cooper DeJean, maybe a little bit of a tweener in this case. I know some of the draft experts said that, like, you know, his ability to kind of click and close and transition as a DB from, you know, when you're breaking on guys or opening your hips was not as pristine as it, and that was perhaps what was defensive back in this board in this draft process. Frankly, that both of those guys are now available entering day two was shocking to me, considering, yeah, you know, just how many wide receivers are coming into the league and how good they are and the rarity of quality cornerbacks. We have to acknowledge that Ravens officials know far more about these guys and their character and everything else that goes into this process than we do. And their access to information and, you know, access to coaches and access to medicals and GPS data goes far beyond what we could even begin to conceive of about, you know, what goes into these profiles. So I didn't expect the Wiggins to be here on the board. I think he's a fantastic pick, but obviously depending on how these next 24 hours go and then the next 6 months go, this is going to be a situation where we are comparing Nate Wiggins to Kool-Aid McKinstry and Cooper DeJean, assuming that DeJean not even stays at cornerback, but just assuming he stays healthy, because those guys were all kind of closely lumped together on my informal big board.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised as well that they are still out there. I asked this question when we did the mock draft and Cooper DeJean was taken by us at 30th overall, but what percentage of the snaps do you expect Nate Wiggins to play as a rookie? He's still very young. Still needs to go through the Ravens strength and conditioning program, which he can add a good amount of weight in a matter of 3-4 months. But, you know, maybe he's not fully developed physically by the time we get to September. And you already have what is expected to be fully healthy Marlon Humphrey and Brandon Stevens coming off a breakout year. And you brought back Arthur Millett. Do you think he could play 70-75% of the snaps or more in Zach Orr's secondary?
Let me answer that question with a question. How would you feel if this is what the Ravens got from Nate Wiggins rookie year? 17 games, 5 starts, 55% snap share.
Good.
Because that is what Marlon Humphrey gave the Ravens as a rookie. And that was coming into a cornerback room that I think had Brandon Carr, had Jimmy Smith. So he was a bit of a cherry on top of that defensive Sunday that the Ravens had, and he was able to make an impact as a rookie, obviously. And then just a couple of years later, he's an all-pro in year three for Baltimore. So I don't think it's dissimilar circumstances for the Ravens. Like, there is an established top two, but you have a guy who is probably at this point, you know, having a higher ceiling than either. I mean, we don't know. We haven't really seen Marlon's peak in a couple of years. We've seen it for stretches. There was like a 4 or 5 week stretch during last season where he was just locked down, not even getting targeted. And obviously we know what he can do in the run defense. We know what he means leadership wise. We know he's a great blitzer. But Nate Wiggins at this point of those three definitely has the lowest floor, because rookies struggle in the NFL. It's just a fact of life. but he also might have the highest peaks, the highest ceiling of those guys, at least for the year 2024.
Yeah. And also, I mean, this is a great situation for him as a player. I mean, he could have been drafted into a situation where he would have had to start day one and be the best cornerback on that team. He has to come in and essentially be the third best cornerback on day one as a 20-year-old. So he has guys around him. He has an incredibly experienced secondary around him. He has two safeties who can make up for stuff around him and make up for his mistakes. So the fact that they're getting this 20-year-old for the next 4, maybe 5 years is an investment in his future. And that's what you want in a first-round pick. You don't necessarily want to be drafting for absolute dire need, which I think you could make a case that tackle is more of a dire need. But you have a situation now where he is surrounded by a whole lot of talent, and he's got, you know, a great system to develop in. In terms of where the Ravens go from here now, was there anything else you wanted to add, by the way, to cornerback play and how the Ravens could stand out above the rest, Jonas?
Not really, just that there were, you know, to the point of guys coming in and doing well. Last year, it was a bit of a mixed bag for those first rounders. Devin Witherspoon came into Seattle, balled out. Emmanuel Forbes came into Washington, did not do a good job. Deontay Banks, PFF didn't love him, but I think he did an okay job. You know, obviously a Terp. Brian Branch, more of a DB, nickelback safety, came in, which is, you know, a man on fire for Detroit. So we are talking about, you know, we are singing Nate Wiggins' praises, but I guess I would say keep your expectations low so that if they are cleared, you are pleasantly surprised, because this is a whole nother ball game. He's going to be up against guys who are not only faster than he's ever faced, but also considerably stronger. And, you know, you got to kind of grow into that body. You know, it's, remember just how much of a kind of chicken with his head cut off Patrick Queen was as a 20-year-old in the NFL. You know, Nate Wiggins, I think, doesn't turn 21 until October, I believe. He doesn't turn 21 until August 28th. So he will be basically 21 and 2 weeks old when that season kicks off. That is an inhospitable age to play football, but someone's got to do it.
Yeah, I mean, there was some questions in this press conference for Eric DaCosta about the decision to come out this early. And apparently Dabo Swinney said he thought Nate Wiggins was ready, and here he is. So, you know, maybe he could have gone back to school for another year, but he chose to come out, and the Ravens clearly believe in his long-term future that they are giving him this opportunity. All right, so going forward now, Ravens still have their needs along the offensive line. Eventually they probably could take an edge rusher. They could wait until day three to take a running back. Do you think that round two is going to be a spot where they could take offensive tackle? Do you think there are going to be enough guys available there by the time they get to 62? Or are they going to have to make a move on up?
It's tough. I mean, the fact that a guy like Xavier Leggett went, or, and even Ricky Pearsall.
Pearsall being a first round pick.
Ricky Pearsall going before Cooper DeJean was not something I had on my bingo board.
Yeah, and A.D. Mitchell is still out there, right?
Yeah, that, I mean,
and Deion Coleman. I mean,
yeah, I think we expected that, I guess.
But Ricky Pearsall ahead of these guys.
He's nice, man. He's nice. I guess my point in bringing up the Xavier Leggett factor is just, and also Ricky Pearsall, is that the board for wide receivers is already more depleted. Let's say that like A.D. Mitchell just isn't on the Ravens board, or they don't expect him to get there. That next tier of guys is already being eaten into. So does that compel you to make a move for wide receiver more than it does an offensive tackle? Do you feel like a Sua Matia or a Patrick Paul or Blake Fisher, Karan Amagaji, all these guys who are definitely flawed, definitely limited in some way. Is there a chance of those guys being there? Do you take a gamble on a guy who's more, high risk than high floor at this point? It's, you know, I think the Ravens, we talked about how the Ravens would tell us where they feel like they are by the way that they drafted. And I think the fact that they got Nate Wiggins tells us that they are they feel like they got a guy who can compete now, but also be elite down the road. I think probably we'll know a little bit more about just how they feel about their bigger picture right now. If they take a guy who's more developmental at tackle, then, you know, maybe they feel better about Daniel Faalele or Ben Cleveland or Andrew Voorhees than we thought, or that we think they should feel about those guys. But if they take a guy who is a little bit more athletically limited, but a little bit more of a sure thing to potentially, you know, chip in and give this team some snaps next year, then, you know, that'll tell us that they're kind of pushing their chips in the center of the table.
Yeah, I mean, my concern, and I've said it before in this podcast, is that the Ravens lack the guaranteed starter and the solid, you know, baseline for offensive line. They do not lack depth. And so as you go on later on in this draft, you know, if they take three guys on day three, that wouldn't really solve the problem for me, because then you're just widening the competition. I would have liked to see them take more of a solidified guy, which means that they could take that guy in day two, and that guy has a much higher chance of starting in week one than, you know, the three guys that they take on day three. But that's why I wanted them to try to get somebody who's closer to starter level in this draft. But I think wide receiver and offensive line are two spots that they should address. They just have to wait.
Edge rusher too.
An edge rusher. They have to wait quite a while. 62nd overall pick. That is a long, long time for you to be sitting on your hands. They have 9 picks. They have the ammo to go up and get somebody, but to jump into the 50s is going to take a lot.
I'll put you on the spot now. Do you think they'll trade up at some point tomorrow?
We had them trading up to like 54. I mean, I think that that's a reasonable expectation. Trade up like 8 spots, maybe. I just don't see them getting... Look, you can pretty much kiss goodbye. You know, it's nice to look at the board and say, well, wow, all these guys are still available. You know, Cooper DeJean, Johnny Newton, Kool-Aid McKinstry, A.D. Mitchell, Ladd McConkey, Keon Coleman. Like, great. All those guys are still available. All those teams in the NFL in the top 10 picks for the second round are going to take them. I mean, those guys are going to be gone very quickly. So it's going to come down quite a while before the Ravens make their pick. So I do think maybe they trade up, but I just don't see it being a massive move all the way up to get one of these guys that like is viewed as a fringe first round guy.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, they did the smart thing today by not trading when they didn't have to. And that will probably end up helping them in the long run, because they held on to that fourth or fifth or third rounder or whatever it would have taken to move up to a spot when they could have just, and they did stand pat and hold their ground. So having 8 more picks for the next 2 days is a good spot to be in. Obviously, I think they will probably be pretty aggressive and maybe looking to move into day three in 2025, because as Eric DaCosta has told us, he doesn't feel great about the back end depth of this draft, but there's, you know, that's what, 150 picks away, 200 picks away before we kind of start getting into the dregs of this draft. And also we should say, you know, one advantage to the Ravens maybe shuttling off with one of their 7th round picks is they get a head start on the undrafted free agent game. You know, they like to have their guys making calls whenever it's legally allowed, because I don't want to get them in trouble to guys who might not get drafted and say, we're willing to offer you this. We'd love to have you in Baltimore. Here's how the depth chart looks. Will you sign with us? And, you know, the Ravens have made great hay by getting guys like Keaton Mitchell, Patrick Ricard, Justin Tucker, the list goes on and on by having that patience and that aggressiveness pay off. So don't know how many picks the Ravens will be making in the 7th round. I don't think it'll be 2.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Jonas, how many coffees are we going to consume over the next? How many Diet Cokes are you going to have over the next 2 days?
I'm looking for pudding.
Pudding is, I mean, I wonder if there are any left. Like, can I take one home? Can we send some to Nate Wiggins?
They got to be high protein.
Very high protein. I can't wait, I will say, for Gianna Han to cover the full dietary evolution of Nate Wiggins, because she's already covered all the food that they have in the Ravens practice facility. And she's done a great job of that, of all the Uncrustables. I should say, crustless PB&J sandwiches that the Ravens have eaten. So I wonder if she's going to just make this part of her beat now.
It is funny to consider now that the Ravens have I think we'd probably all say that cornerback is among the lighter positions in the NFL. And so again, this is before he bulked up a little bit before the pro day, but Nate Wiggins, according to Mock Draftable, was a second percentile quarterback in terms of weight. And I think we would all agree that offensive tackle is the heaviest position. And Daniel Faalele, when he came into the draft, was a 99th percentile offensive lineman. So you have something for everyone. You have something for the skinny guys like me and something for the big boys, which is also like me when I get hungry.
If they could just combine into one person, you know, just share some of that size.
That's like a creative player. That's like the Mad Max.
Exactly. Then they'd be the perfect size.
A 6'8", 384 guy who runs a 4'2".
Look, I mean, you also do see a lot more skinny, thin cornerbacks succeed in this league. I mean, I think Sauce Gardner was one of the skinnier cornerbacks in his draft class, and he ended up being a stud. Maybe it's the fact that you can be less and less physical as a defensive back on wide receivers, and everything gets penalized, you know, but I don't know. It just feels like it's much more doable than it has been before. And if you have that kind of breakaway speed, it's just going to come down to, like you said, Jonas, is how good is he going to be as a run defender? And our team's going to have to target him, or our opposing offense is going to target him to run right at him. How easy is that to do, first and foremost? But also, you know, is that going to be part of another team's game plan if they sense, hey, this guy's way too light to tackle our big running back? They're not going to face Derrick Henry, fortunately, but some of the bigger running backs in the NFL, is Nate Wiggins going to get targeted in run coverage?
Yeah, and I did ask Eric DaCosta about the Ravens' interest in Emmanuel Forbes last year, who obviously went to the Commanders in the middle of the first round. He was a guy that the Ravens really liked. Obviously, Emmanuel Forbes goes to DC, does not have a great year. I wondered if it might scare the Ravens off from another skinny, speedy guy like Nate Wiggins. It obviously didn't. You know, they said that they understood kind of the framing of that question, but that each guy has his own virtues. You know, that just because they are similar in physique does not mean that they are the same kind of player. And I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, to your point about how teams might attack them, you know, even if he's lining up as an outside cornerback, you can still kind of reduce the splits and make things a little bit crowded. I mean, that's, you know, what San Francisco does so well. And they have such great blockers out wide that they can weaponize, you know, George Kittle or Kyle Juszczyk, because maybe they're kind of cracking back on a cornerback who just has no clue of winning against that block. So that's going to be something that he probably has to deal with. That's something that I think every cornerback coming into the NFL has to deal with. You know, I imagine he played probably a lot of press coverage at Clemson because he was so speedy and because he does have, you know, the length of a 6'2 guy. The Ravens obviously like to have that kind of philosophy, just getting up in guys' face and kind of throwing off their release. So it's going to be fascinating. I mean, we're going to see a lot of kind of skinny on skinny battles in training camp with Zay Flowers and Rashad Bateman, both two lean dudes going up against a guy who's not rail thin, but like we said, you know, he was a second percentile weight in Nate Wiggins. And I'm not great like at assessing body physique changes, but hopefully for Ravens, like we are not out there in training camp or in OTAs and are remarking, man, Nate Wiggins is skinny. Because if we can tell that, then Jamar Chase, AJ Brown, all the big bad mofos in the NFL are just going to be licking their chops.
Yeah, they won't be licking their chop Robinsons, though, because he went 23rd overall, 21st overall. You tell me, Jonas. Everything from 20 onward was a little bit of a blur. Who'd he go to?
Dolphins.
To the Miami Dolphins. All right. That just about does it for our first night podcast. We will have complete coverage on the Banner Ravens podcast.
Nailed it.
Where are we? The BaltimoreBanner.com. Also subscribe $1 for 6 months. Jonah Schaefer and Kyle Goon and Gianna Han have you completely covered there as well. So hopefully you're not watching us live. Thank you to everybody who is watching us live. Hopefully you don't have work in the morning and you get to sleep in a little bit. But for those who are listening after the fact, please give us a like, a thumbs up, 5 stars, write us a good review. We will have at least 2 more episodes before the weekend is done.